Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And we're back. Michael Cohen, producer James Platy on the board. We're talking to Gary Glenn. He's the president of the American Family Association of Michigan, now running for the senatorial seat held by Debbie Stabenow for the Republican nomination to challenge her. Gary, when you look at the gridlock in Washington, D.C., how do you envision yourself engaging in the process if President Obama is reelected? Would you be able to find any common ground with the White House?
Well, it would depend. On an issue-by-issue basis, there might be elements on which we can find common ground. But I think the first mission that needs to be accomplished is to stop them from continuing to do damage. You know, Michael, it seems like no matter how far in debt we go, and I think it's now approaching $16 trillion, President Obama's solution is to spend more money. I mean, it really is mind-boggling. Every proposal he comes up with, his State of the Union address, is to spend more money, and not to do it on a pay-as-you-go basis, but to spend more than we're taking in. And so I'm not going to find any common ground with the president on that, but it's not just President Obama. There are parts of the congressional culture that seem not to change no matter which party is involved. You know, all the Republicans, appropriately so, are up in arms to repeal Obamacare, which I certainly will support and will vote to repeal Obamacare. You know, this massive trillion-dollar debt-inducing intrusion by the federal government into something as private as our health care decisions. But the biggest federal expansion of intrusion into our health care system prior to Obamacare was the Medicare Part D prescription benefit that was enacted under President Bush in a Republican Congress by a one-vote margin in the House of Representatives. That in and of itself is calculated to add, I think, about $3 trillion to the debt. And since it only passed by one vote, you can truthfully say that Congressman Pete Hoekstra cast the deciding vote to add trillions of additional dollars in debt onto our children and grandchildren's back. So I think our first job is to stop them from doing the damage that they are doing. Politicians of both parties. Congressman Hoekstra voted for the $850 billion Wall Street bailout, and he voted for the $192 billion stimulus spending package and voted to raise the debt ceiling five times, all the way up to $11 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
On a lot of these spending issues, he voted the same way that Debbie Stabenow did.
Although he did point out that when our men are in the battlefield and at war, he will vote to raise the debt ceiling to make sure that they are funded.
I think that's a despicable characterization, Michael. I don't mean on your part, I mean on his part. To suggest that you have to continue to put this country deeper and deeper in debt, and then rather than be held accountable for it, to wrap yourself in the flag and say that you're doing it to protect our men and women in the armed services, why not shut down the Department of Education?
Mm-hmm.
Why not shut down the Department of Energy? Why not shut down any number of other wasteful or unnecessary programs conducted by the federal government? Why is it that the choice is always you have to go deeper in debt or cut funding or pay or quadruple the health care premiums that are being paid by men and women in our armed services? I think that's one of the things that makes people so angry.
Well, that makes sense.
About politicians.
Although, isn't the nature of being a lawmaker, isn't it compromising and finding middle ground? I mean, if you take a position and you're not willing to maneuver at all, how would you be an effective lawmaker?
Well, the point is, at what point do you give in? And Pete Hoekstra apparently was willing to give in and accept the big spender's notion that your only choice is to go deeper in debt, raise the debt ceiling, make us trillions more in debt, or we're going to cut the thing that the American taxpayer would probably put at the top of the list not to be cut, and that is to perform the legitimate constitutional function of keeping this country safe and secure, i.e. our military. I'm simply suggesting that in order to stop putting our country further into debt, we ought to return the federal government to the duties it was prescribed for by the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. I'm 53 years old, Michael. I made it all the way through high school without a federal Department of Education. We've spent billions of dollars on that particular bureaucracy. We lose 25% of the money we send from Michigan back to that bureaucracy in the bureaucracy, so that people who've never met our children can dictate to us as parents and to teachers and local school boards and principals how to educate our own kids. I mean, we've got 50 state departments of education. Why do we spend billions on a federal Department of Education when those are kind of decisions that ought to be made at the local level? Why not cut that instead of saying it's always either cut the United States military or go deeper and deeper trillions of dollars into debt? I just think it's despicable to keep putting our children and grandchildren deeper and deeper into debt and then wrap yourself in the flag and say, well, I did it, you know, for our men and women in uniform.
I want to abruptly shift topics here. You know, four Michigan cities are among those that are considered the most violent in the country, according to the FBI. That's Detroit, Flint, Saginaw, and Pontiac. The governor yesterday putting out his address to change some of the dynamics there. Why do you think that we're seeing such high crime rates in some of our biggest cities here in the state?
Well, I don't think it's unique to Michigan, even though we are in the worst position in the country in terms of having lost 800,000 private sector jobs. We're obviously in a period of economic stress. That's the case throughout the country, in fact, throughout the world. Michigan just happens to be in one of the worst situations, you know, having lost more jobs in the last decade than any other state in America. So I think you're going to see some social ills and social unrest arise out of that poor economic condition that we all find ourselves in. But, you know, I've long said, Michael, in talks I've given over the years with the American Family Association of Michigan, you can't separate social issues from the fiscal and social effects that they have. You know, if you want to have a limited government and you want to spend less money on police or on welfare or on social ills, then you've got to have strong families. You know, the central organizing unit of our society is the family. And in the ideal, that's a mother and a father committed to each other in marriage and committed to their children in marriage.
But
the healthiest, safest, most secure environment for which a child can be raised. It's where they're going to do best in school. They're going to be best off emotionally, physically, mentally, in terms of their health. They're going to be less likely to be involved in juvenile crime or teenage pregnancy if they have a mom and dad who are committed to them and to each other in marriage.
Without that,
and in fact, the Heritage Foundation and a study by University of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State University found that the single biggest determinant of whether or not you're going to live in poverty is whether or not you're married. So from a strictly fiscal standpoint, and in hopes and in pursuit of having a limited government where you don't have to spend as much on police and crime and social ills, we as a society should promote strong families, get back to traditional family values. So I don't think the two can be separated. And to the extent the family unit is broken down, when the federal government pays a woman more if the father is not in the home, I mean, that's exactly backwards of the situation that we ought to find. We ought to find ourselves in a situation where churches and charities help people to try to maintain strong families.
Unfortunately, if
the husband's not willing to be there, but to have a federal system that financially rewards someone if the dad is not in the home, I think that's one of the reasons we see the breakdown in families and some of the crime.
Gary, unfortunately, we're out of time. Gary Glenn, president of the American Family Association, now running for the U.S. Senate seat held by Debbie Stabenow. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.